Welcome to CoCurious, where we break free from conventional learning. My name is David McLean, and I host educational leaders to practically discuss measuring what matters, not just what's easy to count. We assess genuine learning beyond mere checkboxes, and we're interested in building sustainable futures instead of promoting endless growth cycles. CoCurious is powered by learningadvisory.com, and we're delighted you've joined us for this conversation. A couple of months ago, it was first thing in the morning, and I was just about to facilitate a two-day workshop with a group of mining execs. And while I was waiting for the delegates to arrive, I just had a look at my email. And the first thing I read was, what advantage do you gain from your flaws that make you hesitant to let them go? I had an instant reflection, and it was that I held a very high degree of responsibility for the climate of the two-day workshop that was about to commence. And I was reminded again to practice what I teach. Pierre Duplessis is an award-winning author, keynote speaker, and strategist. And I've had the good fortune of interacting with Pierre a bit. And what advantage do you gain from your flaws? And this is a question for you. That make you hesitant to let them go?
Thanks, David. So that question in my daily life, that question was asked to me, I think about 10 years ago, by my then therapist, who probably like saved my life at that point. That question was posted to me, and it was something that I really had to dig deep in and think about quite a bit, because the reality of it was at that point in time, I was suffering from like severe depression, or had severe depression. And one of the steps towards my own kind of growth and healing and transition out of that was that question. And that was a pivotal moment for me, because at that point, I realized that my depression was giving me, was affording me the ability to not have to engage, to go, I don't have to show up. I don't have to work as hard. I have this big excuse that I have depression. And that allowed me to be downright lazy, because I'm like the depressed guy. Like, it's easy to then put this label on yourself, and it afforded me all this kind of advantages. And then when I realized, oh crap, this is actually what I'm doing, because it gives me this little advantage that I don't have to engage. I don't have to be polite. I don't have to make small talk, because I'm like that guy. That was pivotal for me.
Can you recall if it was conscious or more unconscious, or possibly a combination of the two?
Possibly more unconscious, and then that question made it more conscious. That's the beauty of questions. They open up the unconscious and it pushes it up into the conscious. So that was the gift that question brought.
You work with a lot of high performance individuals and teams. In the context of this question, what advantage do you gain from your flaws that make you hesitant to let them go? Are there particular themes that you experience in your interactions that people and organizations are particularly grappling with in their own existential crises?
One of the most common themes that I find, there's two. The first one would be imposter syndrome that seems to be rife amongst high-performing individuals. Especially, I do quite a bit of work with founders as well. And the size of business that I tend to work with most is sort of scale-up size, 10 to 15 years old, 100, 150 people, around that kind of size, starting to push out internationally. Often those are still founder-led. And one of the things that I find is that they are highly capable individuals and they have extremely low self-esteem. They think they're not worth it. Highly capable, and they think they're not worth it. That sometimes gives them a little bit of an excuse to not show up, or to not be as nice as they should be, or maybe to kind of have a little bit of a pity party every now and again. So that sort of allows them that. But that's like a common struggle. I don't like the word imposter syndrome, though. Like, they have imposter syndrome. I don't call it that. I mean, you just go, okay, you're just insecure. That's actually what's happening. Like, you're not, there's not, it's not a syndrome. You can diagnose yourself, and there's like a tablet that you take for it or whatever. Like, it's you're feeling insecure because you're in a very unique sort of confluence of happenings and ideas. So that's the one thing. The other thing is that tends to happen as well with especially leaders and founders, CEOs, and those, they rise so far above the rest of the business that everything then starts to revolve around them, that people would always come to them. So they end up taking very little initiative to go the other way. One of my close friends is a founder, and he does the same thing. At least he's aware of it. He realizes that often people would make 90% of the effort in general, not only in the business, but like in general in the rest of his life as well. But he would only make 10% of the effort because people are always going to call you. They're always going to want to spend time with you because you're the founder, you're the CEO, you have this aura around you. And then they lean into that because it's easy. Now, everybody's coming to me. Why should I make an effort? But that doesn't make for a very good human being.
What you just shared reminds me of a piece I read about parenting. And one of the drivers of parents who helicopter their kids is that it makes them feel like a savior. What practical guidance have you got for founders to navigate themselves and the reality of scaling their business, which they really want to do, but with it becomes far more onerous systems and processes that robs them of that entrepreneurial fun, energy, madness of the early startup when there are fewer people, fewer customers, less money, and higher risk?
That's really good. That's a really good question. And I've been thinking about it for quite a while. And there's this inherent paradox between chaos and order. And the struggle for the entrepreneur or the founder is that they are pioneers where there are no rules, especially when you're pushing really into a new industry where there are no regulations. You can just do what you want. So it's this really interesting space. And that's what makes it so powerful is that it's got this like chaos and it's got this sort of like unfettered nature to it. But at the same time, there's also this need for structure. And as something grows, structure comes into place. I was watching a little video on this neighborhood called Christiana in Copenhagen, marketed or promoted as the last free city in Europe. So there are technically no rules. It's like an anarchist neighborhood, which they pride themselves on. But when you dig into it, it started in the 60s with a bunch of homeless people moving in there, like sort of annexing this ground. And eventually, like hippies moved in and artists. And eventually, they did buy the ground, the sort of area. But it's this place where you can just do what you want, which sounds really interesting and good. But then when you listen to it, it's been 50 years in existence now. And what happened naturally was like the structure formed. So there's like a board and there are certain rules that they've made. And I'm going, oh, this is the last free city. But the rule is no hard drugs. Cannabis and alcohol is okay, but nothing else. I'm like, okay. So it's like the natural nature of things where you need both these things. You need the chaos and sort of the unfettered, like the pioneers, like pushing in. But at the same time, like you need the structure and this bureaucracy to hold this whole thing. And then that's the tension that all founders have to navigate. You can't have just the one or the other. The moment you lead to complete chaos, nobody wants that. As a founder, the question always is like, how do you walk that tightrope between structure and creativity or adventure or pioneering? The desire is to try and resolve the tension, to just go for the one or just go for the other, and not to be aware of both. Awareness is like the greatest gift that you can give to yourself. Why am I feeling this? What is happening here? What's a deeper reason? The power to reflect is really what needs to happen.
If you were the Minister of Post-Growth Sustainability, what would you focus on for society to break free from endless growth cycles and outdated metrics of success?
That's a really interesting question. I don't really subscribe to something that's post-growth. I don't really understand what that means. One of the things I often refer to is the moment you stop changing, or the moment you stop growing, you're dead. This is the definition of what it means to have died. So often in my talks, I would say, I open the talks with this line. By the time you've read this slide or this line, about 25 million of your cells will have died and you don't like change. Change is part of nature. Growth is part of nature. Like without, there's no such thing as post-growth. So I would challenge that. Stopping to grow means death. So we cannot afford to stop growth. I'm definitely not part of the degrowth voice in the world at the moment. It's like, we need to pull back innovation and we need to hold it back. We need to stop growing because growth is what's harming us. It's like, growth is not what's harming us. Growth in the wrong places is what's harming us. So it's like cancerous cells. As somebody always says, the only things that grow without any reason is cancer and business. But that's not really true. Everything actually grows and moves forward and changes and evolves. And that's the nature of creation, really. So to try and stop that and create something like post-growth, that's a very difficult concept for me to even start to grasp, because what we need is not just growth for growth's sake. What we need is innovation and growth in very specific areas. We need to figure out how to cure cancer. We need to figure out how to develop medicines that are available for everybody. And what's happening at the moment is this conversation, the overregulation in the world is pulling back innovation. And we've been stuck for the last 30 years. And people are like, yeah, but AI. It's like, okay, in the digital realm, we've been pushing forward. But in every other industry, innovation has basically stalled. There's very, very little happening, except for like the odd Elon Musk that's doing something, which gives me a little bit of hope, even though some people think he's proper crazy. But he's playing in a space that's not AI and that's not social media. And like, the last thing we need is another social media platform. We don't need that to grow. We need other things to grow. So the growth conversation is interesting for me. And I don't like the word responsible growth, because responsible also means like retaining it. So it means leaning too much to the regulatory side of it. And it's about focused growth or purposeful growth. We need ways to deliver education to 27,000 schools in South Africa that's high quality and awesome. But now overregulation, so my wife is a teacher, and the amount of admin that she has to do is more than the time she spends in a class, because the government has all these like safeguards in place, which makes sense on a logical level, like all these safeguards, and they want to monitor all the kids and they want to be sure that education is getting delivered. But the regulatory load is so much on teachers that they don't have time to teach. We need innovation. We need like the growth part of it to grow our education, to for people to innovate in that space, so that we can actually have good education for. And I always talk to entrepreneurs about it, and they complain about state of education. And I was like, imagine you have, I think, something like 27,000 schools in South Africa. So you have 27,000 outlets with an average staff of like times that by 40, 50, whatever staff that is in each one. Now go manage that. It's like a gigantic task, but we need innovation in that space. So I don't think there's something as post-growth. Think about focused growth and where do we want to grow and how are we navigating this chaos and certainty, really, these two kind of poles, and how are we actually working with those things as entrepreneurs and just as human beings. And we need to solve our pollution problem. We need to solve plastic. Like, we need something different than plastic. But if you're making too many rules that inhibit engineers and inventors, we're never going to get a new plastic. Just stopping making plastic is not going to help. We need something to replace it. I can go on about this for hours. I get really passionate about it.
It's so yummy, though. I love it.
Yummy, I love it.
Capitalism is one of my polarized aspects of my life. I've got a love and loathing for the growth, intentional positive growth, albeit positive being quite subjective, depending on who gets to decide what that is. And equally, the peril of the endless growth cycles that manifest day to day, particularly in urban society and organizations. If this conversation resonated with you, check out the other episodes on CoCurious. Visit us online at learningadvisory.com. And let's keep learning. Let's keep sharing. And let's keep holding each other to account for the advancement of ourselves and practicing what we teach.